Good morning. This is a very, very early podcast this morning. I'm joined by someone who's flew in all the way from Bangladesh for this podcast. We're joined by former winger Andy Turner, signed for Wolves in 1999. Never made a first team appearance, but there is a story behind that. Andy, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Right, I mean, your story is very interesting, Andy. Obviously, I know you personally, but your story is very interesting, and you know, there's some twists and turns which we'll talk about. It all started back at the Lillishall FA School of Excellence, didn't it, Andy? Where that they used to, obviously, the best players, the best young players in the country, were sort of effectively schooled there. So tell us your time about your time at Lillishall.
What was that? 1989, and it was a time where the English FA wanted to create their own academy, full-time residential academy at Lillishall to hone the best players in the country, play for the national team. There were some fantastic players. I think it was a span for about 10 years, 10, 12, 14 years. I'm not actually sure how long it was, but I was in the group of the 1989-91 group where the likes of Sol Campbell, Kevin Sharp, Jamie Forrester, Danny Hill, people like that, fantastic players. Every person that I played with, every player that I played with was brilliant.
Yep.
All had a future in the game. None more so than Sol. Brilliant players. It was a privilege to play.
Of course.
With them, live with them. Great people, and they still. Yeah, you know, I noticed on Facebook the other day because access in Bangladesh is very kind of hit and miss. You know, like
The Wi-Fi.
You're on Wi-Fi one.
It's probably like here in Canada, mate. The Wi-Fi ain't great.
it's just so frustrating to like communicate and things like that, and I noticed it. Some of the lads had a meet up in London, which is fantastic because you think you're talking about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's still a great group of kids, great group of lads. You know, I don't speak to them as much as probably you should.
Yeah.
Because of life.
Yeah.
But it's great that they still knock about together and they're still great friends because that's what it's all about. You know, football is a career for the individual. It's how you're trying to create a career and whatever. But friendship is fantastic, and it's great to see them so looking so well.
Yeah.
And it was just nice when I got 5 minutes on Wi-Fi. That was great
to catch up. So how old was you when you went to the sort of Lillishall Academy? Yeah. And was it difficult because obviously young man, you have to leave home, and you was continuing your education, wasn't you, at Lillishall?
Yeah, we went to we were housed at Lillishall, as everyone knows. And we went to Idsall School in Shifnal.
Yeah.
And we created it. I just loved football. And my mum probably didn't want me to go because of education and being at home and things like that. But I was so single-minded and so kind of into football. Football was my life and still is. Football, I just wanted to play football. It was an opportunity that it's a chance of a lifetime scenario. And I learned a lot from that time. It made me probably too independent.
Yeah.
Because you have to be independent from a young age, you know, as much as you're with 32 people, young people and people that help you and look after you every day and coach you, you still have to look after yourself in certain ways and you're away from home. And, I had many nights on the phone to my mother. And my dad, you're saying, right, what's happening at home and I want to be at home. But you do it because you want to do it. And it's one of them that it's a chance, and it's an experience that you will never experience again. And it's something that helped me at that time.
And growing up, was you always, like you said, you're single-minded. Was you always single-minded that you was going to be a footballer? Was there any other option, or was it Andy Turner, I'm going to be a footballer?
Not really. I think you don't go out and think, oh, I'm going to be a footballer. All I did was play the game.
Yeah.
And if a door opened, I'd walk through it. So before I went to Lillishall, I'd play for, you know, you play for your school, you play for your clubs, you back then you'd have a school of excellence.
Yeah.
I started at Millwall when I was six.
Wow.
I went to Millwall when I was six. I was just kicking around. I'll always remember it. I was a 6-year-old kid in Chelton Park with my dad, where my nan lived, just around the corner from where my nan lived. Took the ball up the park with my mum and my dad, have a kick around. Guy walks up. How old are you, lad? Do you want to come to Millwall?
But no way. Yeah. So it was just literally kicking the ball around in the park.
Kicking around in the park. I'll always remember it. And my dad had a chat with this guy. Weird. 6 years old I was. Went to Millwall Southwark Park on a Monday night. Monday and Thursday. Monday night, I think it was.
Yeah.
On the AstroTurf there. And my coach was Alan McCleary.
Right.
The old Millwall player.
Was he centre-half?
Centre-half. Yeah, played for Chelsea. Loveliest man in the world. And great coach. I was coached by, I'll always remember it, Alan McCleary and Nicky Milo, bless him.
Yeah.
God bless him. And had a great time, just had loads of fun. And then you just kind of, as I said, you just go through doors because you play the game, you get offered something, not offered something, but you're offered to play in a game.
Yeah.
You're offered to go there, you're offered to go here.
So and you took your chances.
Kind of, it just kind of escalates. And I'll tell you something, my dad had probably had about two or three jobs at the time.
Right.
You know, he started his roofing firm when I was young, and that takes time, but he took me everywhere. He absolutely took me everywhere, and if it weren't for my dad and the support from my family, I've never done stuff that I'd have done in my career at all.
Well, with your dad, that's one thing I was going to come to. Obviously, he was a great influence because he was also a professional footballer for a short time, wasn't he, Andy?
He was at Chelten.
Yeah.
And back then, his knee, he done his cartilage.
Yeah.
And back then it was apprenticeship and professional.
Yes.
And he was on the cusp of professional. He was about 19, 20. And he'd become an apprentice. He started his apprenticeship at roofing.
Yeah.
And he was still at Chelten as an amateur.
Yeah.
And he was on the cusp, and he'll always tell me I was on the cusp of professional.
Yeah.
And his cartilage went.
Wow.
And back in all them years ago, cartilage was a major operation.
Yeah, now it's...
Yeah, and it's just a tweak now.
Yeah.
But he had to make a choice then, whether to create a
business,
a life for himself, or take the chance, have 6 months out, blah, blah, blah. And,
yeah.
And he'd tell me a story years ago. He was about 15. And there was a knock on the door, and me granddad was a real hot Chelten fan, and they lived on the top of the hill, and he was a staunch Irishman and very proud and whatever. Knock on the door, Tottenham Hotspur scout wanted him to start at the Spurs, and he went, "No, he's a Chelten player, thank you," and he knocked shut the door. And
really?
so he had a chance to sign for Spurs back in the day.
And then a career in roofing beckoned.
And it was like he was born in Dublin, came over, lived in Chelten all his life, played for the club, grew, and it's funny, these little quirky stories.
Yeah.
But he had to make a choice in the end because injuries were major them days. And I'll even say he was probably the best roofer in South East England. and he made a fantastic life for himself.
Brilliant.
And what he enjoyed, he loved it.
Right.
He weren't for me. I used to help him. I used to do the felt and battening and every summer and all that and do the stuff.
Peanut, but you can do a bit of mine, won't you, actually?
But, you know, like, it's well, football was just my life, you know, and football just took over. So,
sadly, obviously, your dad never got the opportunity to play for Spurs because your granddad shut the door. But when you talk about doors opening, you did get an opportunity at Spurs and one record. I mean, that's where you started your career, Tottenham Hotspur in the Premier League. You made your debut on the 15th of August 1992 versus Southampton. In September, the next month, you became, and what a record this is, by the way, the youngest Premier League goal scorer for Spurs versus Everton. In fact, that was then a Premier League record, so you was the youngest Premier League goal scorer. 17 years and 166 days. I'm not going to lie, Andy, at 17 years and 166 days, I could just about tie my laces. So what's it like, you know, you made your debut against Southampton, we'll talk about that, but what's it like to 17 years old, next thing you know, you're playing in front of 40,000 people at White Hart Lane and scoring against Big Neville Southall, you know, against Everton. I mean,
I will say this to you, it was just like another game to me.
Okay.
Because I remember, because when you're that young, you're just playing your game.
Yeah.
Because that season, you know, even the season before, I'd recovered from a broken leg. And I just was happy to play.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember, I think I got a fit about September, October time, and they had two youth teams at the time, and I was just happy to play for anyone. And your performances dictate what happens, I suppose.
Yeah.
And a lot of luck as well, but I was just happy playing, and I'd got myself into the first team of the youth team.
Yes.
And we got to a number of finals. And they were brilliant. They were absolute, what a fantastic football. They were like the likes of Nick Barmby playing in it. We had Darren Caskey playing in it. We had Soul in it. We had Paul Mahorn playing in it. We had so many.
I mean, these are great careers in the game.
Great players.
Yeah.
You know, and fantastic people.
Yeah.
And who did make their name in football. And,
yeah.
And whatever. And I just played, and I'll always remember I was invited to go along to a testimonial for. I'll always remember it because the distinctive. I remember it. I was given a tie.
Right.
I said Gareth Roberts testimonial. Hull
City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before. And I've still got it to this day. Do you know, like when your mum keeps everything boxes? And I'll always remember going up to, I think it's Boothbury Park.
Boothbury Park. Yeah, the old ground, bloody hell. Yeah,
it's absolutely packed. So we've gone with, and look, I've done is got my tracksuit on, got my bag, sat in, and I've gotten this big coach, and I don't know where to sit.
Yeah,
because I'm the one of the youngsters, and a few others went.
You didn't get behind the wheel, did you?
And it was just like, and I ended up sitting next to Gary Mabbott, I think, because I think he just had
absolute legend.
And it was just like, because it was a spare seat, and I'll always remember a guy. Guy came from the back of the coach and said, "Do you want a bacon sandwich?" And I'm like, "What's this all about?" You know what I mean? It's like
Actually, you was so that young, you couldn't drink then, could
so
you?
So we go up to Hull City and I play. I've been selected to play. And we won the game 6-2, I think it was. And I had so much fun.
Yeah.
Because it was my first real opportunity or insight of it, because it was a full crowd, and you play youth team games, you play in front of 500 and 1,000 people, whatever. But it was my first opportunity to actually play in front of a crowd, and Nick Barmby played well, and he's a whole lad, so there's a bit of added, you know, interest because he's a whole lad, and he was a fantastic prospect at the time, and what a fantastic player he got to be.
Unbelievable
player, and what a lovely man as well. And he was like, "I just played," and I always remember that. I can't remember who the fullback was.
Yeah.
All he said to me was, "Will you slow down? slow down."
I mean, from your point of view, because it was a testimonial, I suppose there wasn't much pressure, was there?
No. But look, any game you play in, whether it's a testimonial, in them to your professional players. Billy White has played.
Yeah.
And he played against Stuart Nevercott, and I remember Stuart Nevercott coming in from half time with a nosebleed. Because Billy White was a notorious.
Yeah, he was a hard man, wasn't he? Hard player.
He was great at what he did at the time. And as much as he was notorious, he scored goals, he was a target man at the time, and he befitted the times. And they're the type of players you were playing against. So it was competitive, but it was just fantastic. And I played that game, came back, didn't think anything of it. Came back the pre-season, as you do, playing a few youth games, and then went to Glenarvan. Because Jerry McMahon was signed from there from Spurs.
So part of the deal was
the deal, 100 grand, and then whatever it was, and
played a game. So
I just went and I just sat in a, you know, packed out ground, typical old, lovely traditional ground, and you just think, well, watching first team play, travelling with them, stayed in the Heathrow Airport Hotel. And,
yeah, flipping out.
You know, 17 years old. What's going on?
Yeah.
And just really kind of, one thing I never did, I was always respectful of the fact that I was doing it. I never took it for granted.
He was grateful. Yeah, and that's
wow. And it was like, okay, I'll go there. And I always remember it was a there were that many players and that many staff. They are sat on a patio, white patio plastic chair. I don't remember it. And it was broke. But I didn't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was the little things you remember.
Yeah.
And you know, I just watched the game. I think we won 1-0. I can't remember it. You know, but I just love the atmosphere, the experience. And then you just kind of train with them and you go back to the youth team, you go back into the first team and you go, and I was just kind of, I just took it.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah.
And then I actually played my first game at West Bromwich Albion.
Right.
In a friendly. And
We don't mention that club on here, but anyway.
But Wayne Faraday was, I'm sure it was Wayne Faraday, was the right back, and Gary Hackett was the right winger.
Yeah.
And he said, I know Gary to this day. We don't speak much because of life and whatever, but he's a great man. He's done fantastic at Stourbridge. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, brilliant. And he's having a bit of a rest now, I think, but he's a manager that's fantastic over the years and done marvels with them, and he was a great player. And all I remember him as well, he said, "Will you stand still again?" Yeah, it's one of them, look, because I was very energetic, very quick, very kind of direct and whatever, as you say, as people said, and all I did was play.
Yeah.
It just snowballed, really. And we went to Portsmouth and I played in that. Then I went to somewhere else, that Roker Park, and I played that. And then it was 2 days before the first game of the season. Naeem,
he was
a fantastic player.
He's probably
Spanish
midfielder.
One of the best players I've ever played with in that position. Right-footed.
Yeah.
But he was fantastic. What a player. Got injured. He got injured 2 days before the start of the season. And I was throwing a bib. Mate, do you know, like when you have your 11v11 games and you're just training, you're throwing a bib. And I was playing in this 11v11 game.
And who's the manager at this point? Terry Venables, isn't he?
Yeah. Doug Livermore and Ray Clements were looked after the team, but Terry was always around and above them, but it was them three. So I was travelling. But still, I didn't think anything of it. But my dad said to me about 5 years after, he said, "Did you know you was going to play, didn't you?" I said, "What do you mean? You're like your debut." He said,
"Yeah."
"Did you know you was going to play today, days before the game?" I said, "No." I said, just took it for granted. I was just going with the team. An hour, you know, as you do your morning meetings and all that, you knew then. But Terry Venables rung my dad up on the Thursday night, said, "Make sure he sleeps because he's playing Saturday." And that's what the type of man he was.
Yeah.
Because every time I went to see Terry Venables about anything, he was a great man manager. He never cared. He cared about his football passionately. But he never stopped asking about how I was in my family and my friends. You know what I mean? He always wanted to know about, didn't pry, but he was always wanted to make sure if my family was okay, you know everybody. Yeah, he'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
And he cared. And I'll always remember one meeting he had. He made me a cup of tea. You know what I mean? He's one of them guys.
Yeah.
You know, like, not one of them managers that go, "Come in." He'd open the door and brilliant, like that. And he rang my dad up and said, "Do not let him out. He's playing, unbeknown to me."
Yeah.
Thursday night before we travelled. And I played, and the only thing I remember, the biggest thing I can remember in that game, I think I got subbed after about an hour. And the biggest thing, I mean, wear the blue kit. It was a great kit. People talk about this blue.
Yeah,
light,
yeah, yeah.
Sky blue
with
kit.
Spurs Surfers. Across the top. Yeah, 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 I remember it. Yeah, iconic.
Played number 7. And I walked out in the row.
Yeah.
And Matt Letizia,
Benali, would have Benali been playing?
Terry Urlock was me. Yeah. Terry Urlock played for Southampton. He was me. I watched him play for Millwall.
Of course, yeah.
Like that. And,
another hard player.
I used to like watching him play for Mill. I'm playing on the same pitch as him and whatever. And I'll always remember, we're warming up and they're reading the teams out and everyone's going, so all the fans are behind the goal and they go, "Oh, Gary Mabbott, number 6.
Yeah,
Andrew Turner. Went quiet. Who's that? Gordon Drury, number 8. Yeah. And I'm like, that was the biggest thing that day that I was thinking, shit.
The dinner reviews.
I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah.
You know, because I was unknown. I was unknown to anybody.
Yeah.
And that's how I liked it, to be fair. I was never one like. But it was a surreal moment. And then we played. We played 0-0, played against Jason Dodd, who just probably didn't even give me a sniff that game.
Yeah.
Because he was, again, he was top. When you're a Premier League player, you're a player. You know what I mean? I remember it, the Dell, hot day, 60 minutes. And my biggest memory was before the game. It's weird, but it flashed before me.
Yeah.
Because it taking all in. But anyway, I played two more games after that. And then on September the 5th, I think it was, 1992, I was sub. Had a rest. I was told to have a rest.
Yeah.
Because I played the first two games. Came on the sub for Darren Anderton. And scored in the last minute.
Last minute against Everton, like I said, 17 years, 166 days. You went on to score against Man City as well. And I think it was Brentford and Oldham.
Yeah, I scored a few that year.
Yeah, so he scored four that year, which is good for a winger, and especially good at 17 years of age. I mean, some of the players that you played with in your time at Spurs, like you said, mentioned then, Darren Anderton, Sol Campbell, Teddy Sheringham. One person that obviously clearly had a lot of faith in you was Teddy Venables. Obviously, you was at Spurs with him. He then took you to Palace. He was then director of football and took you to Portsmouth. So he obviously had a lot of faith in you. Before we go on to Terry Venables, well, actually, no, Teddy Venables, there's a great story that you've told me before. It's not a great story, actually. When you was on the pitch at Anfield kickoff?
I wasn't in the day. I travelled with it was a bit of a bizarre day, really, because I travelled with the team, went to Anfield, normal game, last game of the season, and we're just standing, you know, like when people walk out onto the pitch and
check the pitch and yeah. Whatever.
And he was in the centre circle and he's beckoned me over. I don't know. Beckoned me over and I stood on the centre circle with him and he went have a look, it's lovely isn't it this place. I said yeah it's lovely.
Anfield.
He said it's what a great season it's been, you know, for me personally. He said I just want to let you know that we're going to come see me Monday, we're going to offer you a long term contract. I thought, oh well,
you know, I mean, what was
but you're not playing.
Yeah. Oh, so you didn't play at Anfield. But when you say long term contract, sorry, buddy, I'm dying here. When you say a long term contract, how many years was you expecting? Or did he mention?
Wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah.
So in this day and age, let's be honest with you, right? First year of the Premier League, 1992-93. 17-year-old comes on the scene. Great, fine. I played 21. Started 21 games. In the end, played 28 or whatever it was, which was probably three quarters of the season. If you looked at the way the world of football is now, past that, so we're looking at Wayne Rooney. I was never in Wayne Rooney's department or even near where he was in terms of his ability. He was special when he still is now. And the likes of the youngsters coming through. You played one or two games, you'd be slapped on a multi-million pound contract straight away.
Yeah, I mean...
And I'll be honest with you. I was on 12 grand a year.
250 quid a week. You'd scored against Big Nev, youngest goal scorer in the Premier League.
But I didn't care. I really didn't care.
You held that record for 6 years, didn't you?
Five or 6 years. Marco Owen took it off me, and what a great person to take off.
Yeah, of course.
Because at the end of the day, another international fantastic player that deserves everything that he's got because of what he did. And the goals he scored and what he did for England and Liverpool. Oh, wow. But it's quite funny, really. I'm like a pub quiz question. You can name nine, but you won't name me in the top 10. But I'm number six.
Yeah.
And I'm probably stuck between Cesc Fabregas and I can't remember it.
So they'll all remember.
Yeah. And it's kind of... then, and people say to me... I had somebody come up to me a couple of years ago. You played football, didn't you? I said, yeah. He said, why don't you talk about it? I said, it's gone.
Yeah.
He said, I'll talk about it all day. I said, well, people didn't know. People in this day don't know that I've played football.
Yeah.
Oh, you're too humble, you are. I'll tell the world. And I'm saying, well, if you tell everybody, you're arrogant and you're big-headed.
Yeah.
And if you don't tell anybody, oh, you're... you know what I mean? But I'm not like that. But I don't think that I don't need to. Because that is part of my life. That is a memory that can never be took off me.
And that record speaks for itself.
And if I've got, there's 20, how many years now? 27 years of the Premier League, is it?
Yeah.
And I'm top six. I'm top six in some stat. of 27 years of worth, right? Okay. Yeah. But it's life. I always think life is made. Like, you're here once.
Yeah.
Make memories.
Yeah.
And make the best that you can. Right? But my career was never mapped out to be fantastic and successful because of things that transpired along the way.
Yeah.
But one thing they can't take away from me was when memories. I walked out of the Dell.
Yeah.
And when I scored that goal against Everton.
Man City.
At Man City. I had a goal disallowed in the FA Cup fifth round against Man City on telly.
Yeah.
Which to this day I think was onside.
Yeah.
But you can't argue with that. But these are the little memories that you have that can't be taken away.
Ever.
And I'm giving back to.
Yeah. So back to that. You're on the pitch at Anfield. Terry Venables is saying, right, this stadium, these are the stadiums you're going to be playing in for the next 3 or 4 years, because that's obviously, if they're saying long-term contract, that's what you're going to be looking at.
Wake up Monday morning, put the telly on, put the sky on, he's been sacked because of the way it was then.
Yeah.
And Alan Sugar and Terry Venables had parted company, and my long-term deal goes out the window.
And that is the end of that.
And that's and that's how quick that was.
Monday morning, and then obviously Ozzy took over. He wasn't in his plans. You then got a move to Portsmouth.
Yeah, I went to Portsmouth for £250,000.
Once again?
£300,000. It's funny that I'd gone to a few loan clubs, and I've never eyed the fact that I'd rather be playing in someone's first team, playing for 3 points on a Saturday afternoon, rather playing reserve team football, and competitive every week. And I went to, it was funny because I signed in a September 95 or 96, I can't remember what year it was now, but the following Christmas, or the Christmas before, I went to Huddersfield on loan. And I loved it there.
Yeah.
I really loved
it.
I'd scored in one of the games and I loved it there. And before I went, they did a deal of Brian Horton, the manager at the time. He signed Steve Jenkins from Swansea.
Yeah.
He had £500,000 to spend.
Yeah.
So it was £250 for me, £250 for Steve. So
yeah.
Steve signed. Lovely lad. I stayed with him in the hotel. Lovely, lovely bloke. Done well with Hereford with Peter Beadle for a while, and he's been in the game, done marvels there. And I'll always remember, I had the four games, and I thought to myself, we went to see Brian. He said, we agreed £250, but the price has gone up, can't afford you.
From Spurs.
And he didn't happen. I won't tell you the amount of money, but it's seven figures.
Really?
It was near about £1 million I wanted at the time because I'd done really well. So it went up. I'm not saying that I was a £1 million player, but I did really well. Scored a fantastic goal against West Brom. So they say it was brilliant. And I had a really good time there.
See, that's the double-edged sword, going on loan somewhere, doing well.
Because they wanted more money because that was what I was told. But I went to South Coast.
Yeah.
For Portsmouth, £300,000, Mr. Venables. I was calling him Mr. Venables, just out of respect. Even when I see him, I call him Mr. Venables. Never, and he always said to me, "Look, Terry." But it's Mr. Venables to me. It was out of respect and how I saw him as a man.
Yeah.
And he signed me at Portsmouth, and everything was going well. And you know, and you gotta kind of get into the team, and if you're not playing well, you're not in the team, and if you're playing well, you're in the team. Blah blah blah. And I was enjoying my time, and one fateful day in January against Aston Villa, it all kind of went tits up for me, really.
Injury?
Yeah. Dislocated my ankles, and it was an accident waiting to happen. And so the surgeon says after 6 hours and five surgeons looking at it, and he said to me, it was, what was it, 1997 or 90, I can't remember the year now. January the 5th, third round FA Cup, Aston Villa at Fratton Park. And it was quite funny, actually, because while I was in Bangladesh, you know, like when you look at the YouTube and things pop up?
Yeah.
Portsmouth v Aston Villa, 97, 98.
Yeah.
And the highlights, Match of the Day highlights, popped up, and I watched it. And I was, and I was one of the it was one of the first clips of Match of the Day was me playing against Fernando Nelson.
Yeah.
I think it was a tackle. And then my name comes up, you know, like as it the substitution after 20 minutes. And it was quite surreal at the time because I'd never watched it.
I never watched it back.
For years and watched it back. And it was a great game. Craig Foster scored two, and we should have won the game, to be funny. But it lasted 20 minutes, and how it happened was, I was no one round me. No one round me at all. And Steve Staunton had the ball, he's passed it to Fernando Nelson, he's passed it back to him. Do you know, like, as you move to where the ball is?
Yeah.
So I've gone to close down Fernando Nelson, and I've heard a gunshot. And I felt like someone's two-footed me. No one around me. So I've gone to run off, and my whole ankle, my whole foot has kind of turned over. So I've gone down, I've gone back up, and I'm literally standing on the side of my foot with my boot on.
Ugh.
You know, and it's floppy. And I'm just thinking, Jesus Christ.
So it was just a freak?
Yeah, it was a freak accident. And as again, because it was like, 1 minute was stable, 1 minute wasn't.
Yeah.
It's like so hit and miss.
Yeah.
I never had an operation for 2 weeks because I wanted to play, so I was strapping it up and it was all and having it, and there was some real damage in there. So the surgeon, I went in, and he just said, "Oh, Mr. Turner, we've had five surgeons look at this. It's been a really interesting case, 6 hours worth." He says, "You'll play again, but very much doubt you play at the level that you are now."
Yeah.
And because since then, because he said it was an accident waiting to happen because there was a fault in your ankle.
So it was always going to happen. Yeah, just which club, which game, you didn't know.
Well, it could have happened when I was 5.
Yeah.
It could have happened when I was 15. It could have happened when I was 20. It happened when it did. It could have happened when I was 55. And I'll always think, is it going to happen to me right foot as well?
Yeah.
But the stability in my foot, in my ankle now, my left ankle, the stability's there, because obviously but the mobility is not.
Right.
So if you're thinking of kind of the movement mechanisms of there's 50%.
Yeah.
Less than that.
Yeah.
So you try playing professional football at the highest level.
Yeah, when you've only got 50% mobility in your ankle.
And for about a year, of like RoboCop. There's no movement in it whatsoever. It was stiff. It was my left foot. So it was a good job. It was my left foot, because if it was my planting foot, my right foot.
Yes, of course.
I wouldn't have, but me being 24, 23, even 22 at the time.
Yeah.
Thinking, well, the surgeons told me I can still play, but not. I didn't want to believe the not at the level.
Yes.
He said to me, "You can still play." But deep in my mind, I knew that I weren't going to play top-end football again.
Yeah.
Because you need your stability.
Yeah.
You need your energy. You need to get around the park. Yeah. You need to do all the things that a high-class athlete would do. But there's me now that I'd play 2 or 3 games and my hamstring would be sore, or my abductor would be sore. Or my calf would be sore.
So it was affecting,
because
really.
I was compensating.
Yeah. Yes.
My body was compensating on my back. So it was compensating everywhere.
Well, you defied the odds, because then obviously Teddy Venables then became director of football. You defied the odds, because then you obviously got your move to Palace, is that right?
Yeah. He rang me up because I just recovered, and he just said, can you get out of there?
So Terry's now had you at 3 clubs.
Yeah. And I think he paid 75 grand for me at the time.
Yeah.
And we had that relationship and he trusted. And I played 2 games there. And you know, like when you just think, I just got over the injury. I played a couple of games there. It was a time where he went in as director of football. Mark Goldberg took the club on. And it was all very big news at the time. And I'll always remember that it was about, I was just training. You know, like when you're training, you're doing this crossing session that I loved doing. I loved it, bread and butter for me. And I pulled my adductor, because my ankle was that kind of fresh out of the you know, it was all right. It was okay. I could do stuff, but
yeah.
Again, it was related,
mm-hmm.
and it was frustrating.
Of course.
And then you had people. I was playing with people like Dean Austin and Lee Bradbury there was at the time, and people like that.
Yeah.
You know, like that. I'd known
previously.
Fantastic
yeah.
players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what a great side Palace had, and Clinton Morrison was up front, and we all know Clinton. He was, how good he was, and things like that. So I had to be kind of top of my game.
Yeah.
And I was never going to be. I was never top of my game. I was never physically, but I was trying. And I played a couple of games, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then the Wolves thing cropped up because Palace ran out of money.
And they had to shed the wage bill. Yeah. So, the biggest move of them all, forget Spurs, forget Portsmouth, forget Palace, the biggest move of them all, you signed for Wolves in 1999, 24th of March, free transfer from Crystal Palace.
Took over my contract.
Just took over your contract. Now, at this point, you're still 24,
yeah.
So bearing in mind, for Wolves, it would have been a good signing. You played in the Championship, you played in the Premier League. 7 years before, you're the youngest goal scorer, obviously, in Premier League history. That had actually just been beaten at that time, you signed for Wolves. Yeah. The move fitted perfectly. Colin Lee signed you. Sadly, you didn't make a first team appearance, and you did leave in the June. Injuries again, Andy?
Yeah, I always remember signing. I was actually in talks with Warsaw at the
right.
time. I was kind of agreed to go there.
Yeah.
And then my agent rang me up and said, I never signed anything.
Yeah.
I was talking to him. I was really interested in Warsaw. I trained for a bit. And my agent rang me up at the time. He said, have you signed for Warsaw? I said, no, not yet. And I was really having a good time. And he said, okay, you got a decision to make. And I went, what's that? And he went, Warsaw or Wolves? And I went, Wolves? I said, he went, yeah. Yeah, expecting to see, go and speak to one another. I went, Wolves? Massive club.
Huge.
Huge club. Loved the club. And I went... And I went to Wolves.
Yeah. It's a no-brainer. Yeah. With the greatest of respect.
Warsaw.
At that point in your career...
Warsaw were a lovely club.
24 years of age.
Yeah. I went to Wolves.
So...
Spoke to Colin Lee, and they just took over my contract. And I went into the dressing room. I went into the dressing room. Steve Ball was in there. Oh, wait. He's legend.
Yeah.
Not even knowing the guy at the time or whatever. Legend.
So, you know, as a winger, if you're going to get the chance to put the ball in the box, you know he's at the end of it.
And then, you know, you've got the people like Kevin Muscat and Mike Stahl and Steve Corriker and...
Keith Curl.
Keith Curl and Neil Emblin, Sedge.
Yeah, bloody hell. Robbie Keane.
Robbie Keane.
I mean, that was a good side.
Michael Jilks, Paul Simpson.
Yeah.
Mate, I'm thought to myself... Wow.
Yeah.
Because I've gone into a dressing room and you've got John Ward, you've got Keith Downing,
yeah.
and you've got Colin Lee.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is a major, major football club that's going for it. Because I'm not being funny, the players there were great players.
That was good players. That was a Premier League team.
But also, good people.
Yeah.
And they made me feel really welcome. Because I walked in and I thought to myself, I walked in, I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I walked in and went, why am I here? What am I going to play in this team?
But at that point, you're still 24.
Exactly, I'm still 24. And I'll always remember, I was in the squad against Crewe. I'd just signed and then I was in the squad.
Yeah.
I wasn't on the bench or anything because he just said, no, just get involved. Blah, blah, blah. Day after, I pulled my groin and I was out for 6 weeks.
And
I will say to you, I will say this. I was a trophy winner with Wolves. We won the Birmingham Senior Cup.
Really?
And I played in the final.
Really?
At Blues Ground, and I can't remember.
I did not know that.
We won the Birmingham Senior Cup.
So we've got a cup winner with Wolves.
I actually played a couple of games in that competition.
So sadly, yes, you didn't make the first team. You signed at the end of March, pretty much April. You get injured, you're out for 6 weeks, that's the end of the season, and you're left in June. Obviously, there are not regrets on your part, because there's nothing you can do about that with injuries, and you did suffer quite cruelly with injuries, but the next season, obviously, you joined Rotherham and you made 35 appearances. So, I mean, we don't need to talk about Rotherham, but my point is that
I think
you could have been making 35 appearances for Wolves the following season.
Maybe, but I wanted to play.
Yeah.
Because of the injuries I had and because of Wolves being the big club there. Because I remember that they only missed out on the playoffs on the last day of the season against Bradford. They lost 3-2 in front of 30,000.
Yeah.
And what an atmosphere that was. But they had a chance to get to the playoffs, and I just thought to myself, I'm never going to play here. As much as I respected it and loved the people, and I still have an affinity with the club anyway.
Yeah. Well, you've made the Midlands your home, haven't you?
Yeah. And I just loved the club. I liked the people. They're very great. But anyway, I got to a point where at the end of that season, I'd actually got quite fit because of the people there, Barry Holmes at the time, and the other guy, I can't remember, the other guy's in New Zealand now. Anyway, I'd got to a point where I was feeling really quite fit.
Yes.
And I had a meeting with Colin at the time. I just said, Colin, I just want to go somewhere to play.
Yeah,
I don't want to be sitting at a football club and not, I just want to give it a go
and taking a wage and you've got to be playing at 24.
The way my mind was is I just want to play and just because after being gone through what I've gone through. But I will say this to you: I think every game that I played at Rotherham was loved it. I loved Rotherham, but I was hiding an ache. I was hiding a pain.
Yeah.
I was hiding kind of, you know, I'd go home and I'd have an ice pack on me after every game. I'd have an ice pack on me.
And at that point, you're 25, 26,
I'm thinking, I never told anybody that. No, who cares? You just do it. But you want to play.
Well, your problem
is... You're in a team that's second in the league, in League Two. And the second season I was there, I only played 4 or 5 games.
Yeah.
But I was forever injured.
But you tell him you're carrying an injury, you're getting dropped.
And this is something that I'll always, the biggest frustration of mine was, it upset me enough. It upset me psychologically in the end because of the frustration was that much. I'd play and people expect, when you come from Spurs, when you come from these places, and when you've done what you've done, everybody expects you to score 2 or 3 goals and be the fantastic player.
Yeah.
Right? And every time you go onto that pitch, because of your reputation, they expect. But in my mind, yes.
Yeah.
But bodily, it was a frustration.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember I played Wickham Wanderers, and we had a... Was it Wickham? No, Reading, I think it was. And we lost 3-1, and I didn't play very well. And I wanted to play well.
Yeah.
But, you know, like when you're not fit and you're always catching up with stuff and when you're fourth game in and in the end, I kind of got frustrated with myself.
Yeah.
And I knew I couldn't sustain even that level at the time. And then I went, but me being kind of never give up type scenario.
Yeah.
I didn't want to give in. I'm still 24, 25, 26. I just wanted to keep playing. And I wanted to prove doubters wrong. Not doubters, but people that are telling me I can't do things wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But after every game, I said it. A recent article I did with an Irish guy, a lovely bloke. I go back to my Portsmouth days. The first game I'd come back from the injury from my ankle was a practice game in Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Against Bournemouth.
I did read this.
And I'd done my knee clicked. My cartilage, I could feel it, my cartilage.
I didn't tell anybody.
Because I was embarrassed at the fact of I'd been out God knows how long.
Yeah.
And I'd done my knee. And for four months after that, it was blowing up every time I played.
Yeah.
And I was treating myself because I was embarrassed to say anything because of the amount of time that I had. And I just thought, I can't go through all this again.
Yeah.
And to this day, the right knee still gives me grief. But I've still got movement.
You didn't tell us when we picked you for the Wolves All-Stars the other way. He's still hiding injuries for the All-Stars.
But you know I love playing in you.
Of course.
But no, it's just one of them that, it's just a frustration that will always be with me.
Yeah.
Because football's my life and you want to play. But I was never one of these that never wanted to play because, you know, I always wanted to play even through injuries. I mean, and I never played. If I wasn't playing well, you don't play.
I mean, the reality is, Andy, you've played still well over 200 professional career games at a great level. 9 Republic of Ireland under-21 caps. It ain't a wasted career. You know, it's not... I suppose there is some what could have been, but the reality is, in my opinion, flipping heck, you know, I'd have bloody cut my right arm off to even, you know, the career you've had. But I mean, like, at Wolves even, you know. So...
I loved my time at Wolves. Even though I played, and that short spell, I loved my time at Wolves. I was going to say that. Not because you're sitting there and I know. I just loved the way, the feel of the club, the way, it was just sincerity. Well, and it still is in a way.
You've made your home in the Midlands. You still play for the Wolves All-Stars. And also, in 1994, you played at Doncaster Rovers on loan.
Yeah.
And the manager there was a former Wolves manager, Sammy Chunk.
He was brilliant. Lovely bloke. I'll always remember, I went up there. I was at Spurs at the time. And a scout called Mac. I never knew his name. Mac, a lovely bloke. He brought me there. And his assistant was Jimmy Neighbour as well. A great player, Spurs winger. He's certainly passed away. And both have now. Is Sammy still? Anyway.
Yeah.
But I went there and he just let me play. He just shook my hand.
Yeah.
And I just loved that month. I wanted to stay 2 months. I wanted to stay 3 months. They wanted me to, but things dictated at the time.
Yeah.
But I just loved that time. And Bellevue was the biggest pitch in the whole country. And I was a winger.
And so it looked actually, I remember it looked as wide as it was long. Yeah, it was almost square.
And I loved it. And it was League Two. And I think my first game and it was Torquay at home. We won that one. Darren Moore played for Torquay that day. I remember that.
Big Des.
I always remember because you always remember great players. And you were only a young kid as well. And you played really well. And we played about 6 games. And I left there and we were in the playoffs at the time. And what a fantastic time that was. I really enjoyed it. And Sammy just said to me, come and play and come and make a difference. And I played 6 games and scored about 2 or 3 goals. And I really enjoyed it. And it was just something that I needed at the time. It was pure football. There was no airs and graces.
Yeah.
It was Bellevue, 4,000 or 5,000 people watching.
Yeah.
League Two, rough and tumble.
Big pitch. And for you, you're a touchline hugging winger. So that was, like you said, perfect for you. You get out in space, create attacks. Yeah.
Graham Jones, striker. Gary Brabin, midfield. You know, some great players.
You also, after your career ended, you coached at Wolves as well, didn't you, Andy?
I came out of the game, and then I was at Chasetown I went in to do some coaching at Chasetown, and then the physio, Gary McHale, lovely bloke, still about.
Yeah.
Great lad. He was at Wolves.
Yeah.
And he knew that I had aspirations to coach. And I spent a year, just over a year, at Wolves coaching the under-10s.
Okay.
And one of them was Ryan Leek.
Right, yeah.
He's still at the club, I think.
Yes, yeah, I believe he is.
And he's on loan. He's abroad at the moment, I think.
Okay.
But do you know when it's nice that you've coached, did it with Pop? Me and Pop did it. He's very local.
Okay.
Great guy, great coach, lovely bloke, great set of kids at the time, and it was just nice that one of them went all the way through.
Yeah.
And he lived in Chasetown. Yeah. He lives in Chasetown. His mum and dad still live in Chasetown. And I used to see him along the way. Do you know, like when you kind of see him along the street, and used to stop and played for Wales as well.
Yeah.
And you used to stop and have a chat and how's you doing and all that. And it's just nice that a little under 10 went all the way through. And I'm not saying that, look, now the people that helped him along the way. I was a tiny little cog for a few months. But it's just nice to know.
But I think from your point of view, it's a similar story in terms of, you know, you come through, obviously, you know, as a young kid, the youth teams, you get to the academy. So it's nice to see another player follow that path, isn't it?
Especially at one club.
Yeah.
Because you coach players and they end up going somewhere else or losing their way and going. But it's just nice to see a lad go all the way through the system.
Yeah.
And sign that professional contract.
Yeah. And hopefully he will make it at such
a young age.
Yeah.
And what a good left foot he has.
Good as yours.
Not as good as mine.
So we now obviously you're living in you have been living in Bangladesh. You've actually no expense spared here at the Wolf Whistle, where we flew Andy in. We've chartered a plane from Bangladesh. He's leaving in literally 15 minutes time to get back to Gatwick. But what jobs have you had, obviously, since you've retired? What jobs have you had outside of football?
When I came out of football for a bit, I just wanted to get involved in the local side.
Yeah.
So I went down to Chasetown and I spent a lot of years doing that.
Yeah.
I started off, I'm trying to recollect now. What I did was...
You worked in a gym, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I'm just trying to backtrack.
Yeah.
So I came out of football and I'll always remember, I came out of football and I said that. How many times was that? And I got a job in Cannon's gym.
Yeah.
In Cannock.
Yeah.
You know, Nuffield now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I got myself my gym. Well, I went down there and I got to know the guy, the gym manager, who oversees it, Mark, lovely bloke, fantastic Mark Arnold, fantastic man, through the guy that actually owned Cannon's.
Right.
Through a conversation.
Yeah.
So he said to me, go down there, what do you want to do? And I told him, he said, go down there, because I own it.
Yeah.
Go and see Mark, and they offered me some casual hours.
Yeah.
As a gym instructor.
Yeah.
Didn't have a qualification at the time. I've come out of football, Jays, with no qualification. Well, I mean GCSEs, as you do, which could have been better, but football takes over.
Yeah.
You know, you come out of the game with hardly anything, and you think to yourself, well, I've got to pay a mortgage now, and I've got to do this, so I have to do something. So I went there as a casual gym instructor and they put me through my gym qualification, which I was so grateful for at the time and still are. And in about 6 months I became gym supervisor, and that's overseeing the whole gym. And I really enjoyed that because I was still doing my non-league stuff and in a gym environment, sport environment, helping people and things like that.
Yeah.
And then after that Then I got involved with schools.
Yeah.
And then it's quite funny that, because this is how I kind of created the next 10 years of my life. Because I then was offered a cover supervisor role in at Chasetown Sports College at the time, Erasmus Derby. Because Chasetown had a good relationship with the school, and I just wanted to try and not better myself, but I wanted to get in that school environment
because
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Coaching me. So I've become a cover supervisor at the. And I loved it, absolutely loved it. And it was at the time where Chasetown had got into the first round of the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And I felt like a professional then, going scouting and things like that. And then we got the third round gig. We got into the third round about 2 years later. And then I had this idea that I thought to myself, well, you've got all these full-time scholars, all these apprentices in full-time football, and there's so many lads that didn't get the opportunity. So there's so many lads coming out the game.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, on the back of all this success and the nationwide furore that Chasetown had at the time.
Yes, with the cup runs.
Yeah. And me being a good part of that.
Yeah.
I approached Mick Joyner, the chief executive at the time, and said, I want to create my own non-league football apprentice scheme.
Yeah.
So exactly the same as full-time football.
Yeah.
But in non-league.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of research and did that, and I think there was only one or two clubs doing it. There was colleges doing similar, but there was only one club doing it at the time that was full time, like in a full time environment. So I've had lots of meetings, brother. I've had a massive amount, 200 meetings, and only about 4 of them were good.
Yeah.
But in the start of 2009 year. I got the go-ahead to create a full-time football education scheme.
Yeah.
At Chasetown.
Okay.
Through a fantastic football league educator at the time, because they were educating in they were a education scheme for professional clubs.
Yeah.
But they diverted into non-league with me at the time, and we created our own, and we got 24 kids, and we was probably the only club definitely in the Midlands to be doing it.
Yeah.
And one of the first to be doing it in a full time. So I was getting lads from Coventry, I was getting lads from Warsaw, I was getting lads from Wolves, I was getting lads from West Brom, and I put these kids together 2 years, and we were educating them, we were giving them BTEC, we were giving them we were educating them through gym instructing, we were giving them FA coaching courses, we were giving, and now everyone's doing it.
Yeah.
Everybody's
so caught on in it, yeah.
And if I could have patented it,
yeah,
in a weird way. Not saying it was my idea.
Yeah, but
everybody it all caught the imagination. And I mean this, we were playing the likes of Mansfield, Rotherham, Shrewsbury. We went to Blackburn, we was playing QPR. The first year we did it, Raheem Sterling was playing with QPR against us.
Raheem Sterling?
Yeah, before he went to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And a little black lad, brilliant he was.
Good player.
But no,
I mean, good player back then. Yeah, I mean, could you tell he was going to make it?
Yeah, absolutely. And he was brilliant. But we were beating them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you beat them or not, but we created something that was unique, that was give players another chance, and I was in that environment for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And I loved it, and I still loved it, and I still love it, but times move on, and things happen, and I'd had loads of success with it in terms of lads going into the professional game through non-league.
Yeah.
I had lads going through. I had lads getting into FA Youth Cup second rounds and beating professional sides. We won leagues. But that's not about me. That's about the lads.
Yeah.
And I helped them. And I was more proud than the fact that I was getting lads through university and getting them jobs rather than the football.
And you're now in Bangladesh? Yeah. I mean, what? How did that opportunity come about?
Well, I was just... I was just minding my own business, because I'd come out of what I was doing. I was in between jobs, the football jobs at the time, because I'd been scolded, if you like, by a couple of things, and I'd went back to do some school stuff.
Yeah,
just minding my own business. I was enjoying it, and then I had a message from a friend of mine that was technical director of Bangladesh Football Federation, Mr. Smalley, lovely bloke, love him to bits, great bloke, lovely man, really knows his stuff, absolutely great, and he just said, do you fancy working abroad? And I was like, okay, well, give me some details.
You're thinking America, Australia,
and I went, what is it, Spain, in Bangladesh? And I was like, and I thought to myself, oh, I'll have a couple of weeks to think about it.
And he went, because you've got a missus, haven't you? Yeah, you've got a family decision.
Can you let me know in two or three days?
Yeah.
And then I thought to myself, I might never get the opportunity to go and experience something profound, so different, so culturally amazing.
Yeah, no Wi-Fi.
No, it's difficult. It is absolutely difficult because it's a poor country.
Yeah.
It's a country that is developing. It's a country that is trying to stand on its own two feet.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the newest countries in the world.
Yeah.
But one of the most populated countries in the world on a small on a small piece of land.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely chaos. It's chaos. It's chaotic. It's everything that England isn't.
Yeah.
And I will say, and I come back here with a totally different outlook, because you have your stresses, you have your strains, you have your Yes, you have your problem. Yes, you do. But England is, compared to Bangladesh, have everything. They've got benefits, they've got NHS, they've got everything that you'd want.
Yeah.
Bangladesh have nothing like that.
Really?
Nothing at all like that. So it's you look at the politicians arguing and all the Brexit business, and I look at it and I'm in Bangladesh and I'm thinking, mate,
yeah, I'm gonna have a final question in a minute about if you've got any regrets in football, any personal regrets, or obviously you've met Alan Sugar, haven't you, as well? Just going
along
back to
the
first time.
Along the way.
So I never really you're
got
fired.
To, I never really got to like a personal relationship, like everything.
Yeah.
He was top of the tree and Messiah, if you like. But he'd always go out of his way to say hello if he was there, and
yeah.
He'd be very supportive. He'd always be at the games and things like that. And we're talking a long time ago.
Yes, of course.
Times move on, but. I just wish he hadn't had them arguments with him all the time. But,
yeah, because you're just normally, you're still being Spurs now.
What that man has achieved in his life is unbelievable,
yeah.
And what a businessman and a person, and you know, and he's still doing what he does today. And
in your many days, sadly, of rehab, you actually rehabbed with a certain Paul Gascoigne.
I broke my leg in the January, and he done his cruise shit in the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
And we started...
Just before that, yeah,
we started the we started that season with his knee in a brace and me with a pot on my leg. And I'll always remember one... He was always, like, full of beans, as we know. But he had a really... He's got a really lovely side to him.
Yeah.
And I always remember... I only wanted him to sign a piece of paper. Like a bit of paper. Like the A3 by A4 piece of paper. And I just said, would you mind doing that? And he took it off me and he folded it into about... You know, like, he folded it tightly.
Yeah.
And I unfolded it. And I always remember he's put, best wishes, Paul Gascoigne. Because a lot of times, people just go, give me a second. And he went... He must have written that out about 12 times. And he gave me it back and said, give them to your pals.
Really?
And he just... And that was like the testament of the man. That was what
but
the
so
guy
did you,
was like.
Did you ask him for his autograph
for
you?
Yeah.
And you was at Spurs at the time?
Oh, wait.
See,
I was in awe of it. Like, do you know what? When I was in the first team at Tottenham.
Yeah.
At such a young age.
That's a great story, by the way.
I only spoke people when I was spoken to. Because I was, and as much as you think, oh well, you got to have a bit about you, and you got to have this, and you got to have that. But I was playing with people at the time that were household name, world class players. You had
internationals.
At the time, Teddy weren't there, but Teddy was bought early on in that season.
Yeah.
And the first part, but you know, when Teddy walks through the door, you know, you've got a player on your hands, and probably the nicest man in the world.
Yeah.
At the time, you got Gary Mabbitt, you got Neil Ruddock, you got Pat Mandanay, you got kind of, God bless his soul, Justin Ennerborough, what a fantastic man he was, you know, and what a great fullback. And I played behind him, in front of him,
a few times. Of course you did,
And he'd help me along.
Same position left.
You know, and it's such a shame, tragic. Vinnie Samways, you got Gordon Jury,
Naeem,
Darren Anderson. So you kind of... You're kind of in awe straight away, but you have to play with these players. So you've got, and it was just like, in them days, you got knock on a door to go in the room. I didn't, but I was still kind of, I still felt myself in the youth team group as well as the first team group, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So nowadays, there ain't even a knock on the door. They just walk in and do what they do. That's the way of the world. But years ago, to go into the first team dressing room, you'd knock on the door and wait.
Yeah.
And
it is a respect thing.
Yeah, it is a respect. And that's one thing that I always did and always do is respect, and so grateful for the opportunity that I got.
And
I will say this to you, Jace.
Yeah.
You're probably better players than me at the time.
At Spurs.
Yeah. And people, and I just. happened to be given an opportunity in the best league and in the world by somebody. I took it at the time, and I wish it had. I wish it had lasted longer.
But, so talk about regrets, yeah.
But
have you got any regrets?
Of course, you have regrets in certain things that you do in life and in football. But I know that it was never going to be a fantastic career.
Yeah, you knew it was going to be short-lived.
I didn't know it was going to be short-lived, but in the end,
you come to terms with it almost.
I come to terms with the fact that I had what the doctor said, a defect in an important part of your body to play football.
Yes.
And it was never going to be sustainable. So I could have been playing for Tottenham Hotspur for 5 years or 6 years, 7 years, could have been playing White Hart Lane against Aston Villa.
Yeah.
And that same thing would have done.
So it was always...
It was always going to happen.
We didn't know which pitch,
But it happened at the time. But I will say this to you. I will always be respectful and always never take for granted what I had.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was a fantastic experience, and people would give their right arm to do what I did.
100%.
And at the end of the day, I'd always be grateful for that opportunity. Even whether it was 6 months, whether it was 5 years,
but at the end of the day, you've lived the dream. And finally, you asked Gazza for his autograph. Did Gazza ever ask Andy Turner, the youngest Premier League goal scorer at the time, 17 years, 166 days, did he ever ask Andy Turner for his autograph?
No. Andy. He wouldn't even know me if I walked past him now.
Listen, Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Like I said, we touched upon the story at Wolves, really, and it's a shame. And we're going to call this "The Ink Never Dried" because obviously you signed your contract, and sadly it wasn't to be. But Andy, the stories have been great. You've had a fantastic career. Thank you for your time.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Thank you.